This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Doe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
I'm talking to Hjemme Jansen for JobBite. Hi, Hjemme.
Hello.
You're working on pulsars. Can you tell us about what pulsars are and why they're useful?
Of course. So, as you said, my main interest of work is studying radio pulsars, and we observe these pulsars with the among others, with the Lovell telescope here at Jodrell Bank. It's a radio telescope, and pulsars are a very specific type of star. They are the remains of normal stars, which when they were quite heavy as being a normal star, at the end of their life they exploded as a supernova, where the outer layers of the normal star were expelled, and you end up with the core of the normal star, which is a very tiny ball of mainly neutrons. That neutron stars are about 1.4 times as massive as our own sun, but they're only kilometers in diameter. So you're really looking at a very compact object here. And the nice thing about these type of neutron stars is that they're spinning around very fast. So they're rotating with a period of about only 1 second up to about 500 times a second, roughly. And they're also very highly magnetized, so the combination of this rotation and the high magnetic field makes them emit a radio emission in a bundle, a bit like a lighthouse. So that's a very nice thing to study. So every time the star rotates, you get a bundle of this radio emission that sweeps across the Earth, and that's how we see them as pulses, which is where the name comes from.
And what do these radio emission pulses tell us?
So the nice thing is that They rotate very fast, and so you can see it as a lighthouse, but also a bit like a clock. So because these are very stable rotators, because they rotate so fast, you can use them as tools, basically, as clocks. And that's why my field is called pulsar timing, because we're using pulsars as clocks. So we try to measure each pulse of the pulsar coming to the Earth, and from the way these pulses behave, we can learn about the stars themselves. So because they emit radio emission, they lose energy and they slow down in their rotation. Also, when they are in a binary with another star, you have the effects of the orbit being transmitted to the arrival times of these pulses. So by carefully measuring and monitoring these pulsars, we can study what the binary does and how it evolves.
So what does your research involve?
So this is the main thing that I do in my research. So I use these pulsars as clocks. And the specific thing of my research is to try and use these pulsars, a lot of these pulsars, as a subset. So we make an array of the pulsars, and we try to detect gravitational waves by carefully looking at the signals of about 20 of those stars at the same time.
Cool. So can you tell me a bit more about what a gravitational wave is and how we actually detect them?
Yes, of course. A gravitational wave is a prediction made by Einstein, and they are thought to be emitted by, massive objects orbiting around each other. So because they are so massive, they change the space-time around them. So it's a bit like if you throw a stone into a pond, you get ripples of the water around it. And that's sort of comparable to what happens if you have two black holes orbiting each other, for example. And there are different objects that can generate gravitational waves, and that is also the difference between several gravitational wave detectors. So they're all sensitive to a different frequency regime. For example, you have LIGO, which is a ground-based detector. And LIGO, like all gravitational wave detectors that we are currently using, they work based on this principle of interferometry. So they're trying to measure differences in path lengths, basically. Mm-hmm. And the ground-based detectors like LIGO and Virgo, and there is one called GEO-600, they are measuring smaller scales than, for example, what we do with pulsar timing array, because we are doing basically exactly the same thing as LIGO, but then on a galaxy scale. So next to LIGO, we have also, there is also a plan to put spacecraft into space, to launch a space mission, which is called ELISA. Mm-hmm. And this works as well, also like LIGO, with laser interferometry. So they have three spacecraft flying in an orbit, just trailing the Earth in the orbit around the Sun. they are trying also to measure differences in the arrival times of the laser light by the interferometry principle.
Okay.
So it's a slightly bigger scale than LIGO, but a smaller scale again than the pulsar timing array that we are working here in Europe.
And what are the main observational challenges with looking at gravitational waves?
Well, gravitational waves are very small things, and we only know that they exist by measuring the changes in pulsars, in orbits of pulsars. So Einstein predicted that because of the emission of gravitational waves, the orbit of a pulsar around another star would change. And we have measured that using pulsar timing about 30 years ago, and a Nobel Prize was already awarded for that, for the proof that gravitational wave existed. But that was an indirect detection, so we only measured the effect of the gravitational wave emission on the orbit, but not the gravitational waves themselves. We are looking for changes in path lengths here, and they are very, very small. Also, the pulsar signals themselves are really weak. I said before that we are trying to measure each pulse of the pulsar, but we actually have to observe for quite a long time to get one pulse signal. We have to add it all up. Also, what we're doing is we're using quite wide bands in observing, and the interstellar medium has an effect on the signals that are emitted by the pulsar. So what happens is that at the lower frequencies that we observe at the lower part of our band, the signals arrive later than at the higher part of our band.
So, sorry, by band you mean the frequency range?
Yeah, the observing frequency range. So we have about 100 megahertz or up to a 500 megahertz observing range that we observe at the same time. But because these pulses are like happening every couple of milliseconds, you have the danger that they smear out over the whole band, so you have to correct for that. And you don't know in advance exactly how much of delay there is, so you have to correct for that and then integrate in time as well to get your signal. Also, one of the difficulties for actually detecting gravitational waves is that because the pulsars themselves can have differences in the way they emit radiation, you cannot just observe one pulsar and detect gravitational waves. You need an ensemble of pulsars to be able to say that it was really a gravitational wave that you have measured and not something that you don't know about but was just local to the pulsar itself.
So generally, how many pulsars would you like to have a good sample?
Optimally, we would like to have as many pulsars as possible to do that. But unfortunately, not all pulsars are suitable for this type of work. We really need the so-called millisecond pulsars, as they are the most stable ones. And we are looking at the precision level of the observations of about 100 nanoseconds that we need to reach. And at the moment, we only have about three or four of those pulsars that are really good enough.
Okay.
So at the moment, a main part of my work is focused on in the first place, improving the ones that we have, but they are not good enough, or to find more new pulsars that are good enough to be included in this ensemble that we need to detect gravitational waves.
So what does the future of the research involve?
We can build larger telescopes, so we have more sensitivity for the pulsars themselves, which improves the precision of each pulsar individually. So that's a project that we're doing in Europe right now, and it's called LEAP, the Large European Array for Pulsars. We're sort of at the maximum what we can build for a single telescope, but what we can do is, in a clever way, connect these telescopes together. At the moment, we have four and almost five radio telescopes in Europe. We have the Lovell here in the UK. We have the Westerbork Telescope in the Netherlands, the Effelsberg Telescope in Germany, and an Ansé telescope in France. And hopefully this year we will have another one, which is the Sardinia Radio Telescope in Italy. So what we do is we observe the same pulsar at the same time with all these telescopes, and then all the signals of these telescopes we add up in a coherent way, so they all do exactly the same thing. And then we end up with a telescope which is a lot bigger. It's basically a virtual telescope that we're making, but the signal is going to improve.
And so how much improvement do you hope to get?
What we're hoping for is an order of magnitude, so from a factor of 5 to a factor of 10 improvement in the timing precision for each pulsar, and that's hopefully just what we need. If we have about 5 years with this new telescope, we might be able to actually detect the gravitational waves that we're looking for.
Okay, cool. And what's your role here at Jodrell Bank?
Because we have the four telescopes that are all in different places in Europe, it's not trivial to observe the same pulsar at the same time. Also, all these telescopes have different setups. So you have telescopes like the Lovell telescope, which are just a large dish which is set up in a way that it can rotate on the ground and then have the bowl tip over in elevation. For example, the Westerbork telescope, it's an array of small dishes, and it's slightly differently mounted. So it's called an equatorial mount. It has different limitations in what part of the sky it can see at a specific time of day. And then we have the Nansei telescope, which is a very uncommon way of a telescope. So it's set up in a way that it can only see a very tiny part of the sky at the moment, but it's really a quite a powerful telescope. But having that telescope in a virtual dish that we're trying to create means that you can only look to the south really for the pulses that you need. So to make an optimal schedule of what we do is we observe 24 hours in one go. Mm-hmm. And to make an optimal schedule using as many telescopes as you can and having the best improvement in your timing precision, that's what I do. And also okay. Trying to find the best pulsars to include in the subset that we want to observe.
Brilliant. Thanks for joining us, Hema, today.
Very welcome.